I'm Nikki Lesprince, your host here on the Journey to Wellness podcast. I am super passionate about having conversations around wellness, and it could be around physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual wellness. I believe that having these conversations builds connections and offers insights to others for options that they could try if they're struggling in an area of their life. I'm a mama to 5 little kids, 8 and under, building my dreams of living a holistic life, educating on massage therapy, and continuing to grow my studio, Encompass Wellness Studio, where we offer customized massage therapy, holistic products and gifts, and other therapies to serve those in my community the best way I know how, through bodywork. I do all of this in a tiny town in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We are here on the Journey to Wellness podcast to have in-depth, open conversations to learn more about different options of taking care of yourself so that you can feel great and lead a life that you desire. We'll discuss everything from chiropractic care to relationships to coaching to opening yourself up. So get comfy, come open-minded, and prepare to learn about options you've never thought about or never tried. This is the Journey to Wellness podcast. Let's dive in. Hi, Gina. Welcome to the Journey to Wellness podcast. Did you ever think you'd be here with me?
I'm very happy to be here with you. I'm really excited you're doing this. This is new and needed.
Yes, definitely. So Gina has, we're related, first of all, but also since 2021, she's been involved with me in building Encompass Academy, my massage school up here. So she's been a teacher for me, and she's been doing massage for how many years?
18, I think.
18 years. So tons of experience with working on people and body work. And then recently got her yoga certificate as well, yoga teacher training. And so just all of the things, but we also want to talk about technology, something that's come through for her lately. But I'm going to back all this up and just, I'll have you give an introduction more of who you are, what you do, what you offer.
Yes, I am a massage therapist, and I just kind of came by that somewhat. It almost felt like just real easily, when I did decide to go back to school. And I've been working in the local area for, 18 years, and maybe a little bit before that, just with, practicing through my schooling. And then I naturally now more recently have moved in to teaching yoga. I've practiced yoga before. But now I really wanted to make some big changes in my life. So I thought if I took the training, that would help me make personal changes. And then it just naturally evolved into teaching other people, because once I learn of something that's, so valuable to myself, I want everybody else to know all about it. And, kind of coinciding just actually last year in May, I just decided I also wanted to share how much just limiting my technology use and getting rid of all social media has really benefited myself, my family, my mental health. And it seems to really be just a way to reconnect with myself and not have all of those distractions. And then it's easier to just practice yoga in that way, or vice versa. Practice yoga, you get more in touch with yourself, and it's easier to let those distractions go.
Yeah, definitely. Have you ever been a huge technology user or social media user?
I want to say no, but if I had to actually think about it, I was definitely using it a lot. I haven't had social media. Well, since 2016 really is when I stopped using Facebook then. But yeah, so at that point it had gotten to the point where there was just, it was really just a lot of mindless scrolling, things that we all know about social media, but we don't really know how to disconnect from that. It's designed to keep us there. It's designed to engage us so that we don't want to give it up, or we think we're doing less with it than we are. You really have to make an effort to actually disengage and really get honest about your use in order for you to see what it's actually doing. So yes, I guess I was more of a, to answer the question, yes, I was on my phone a lot. And specifically it was my daughter's behavior in school. I didn't notice the correlation until I got away from the technology. And so that's what I tried to do in my workshops is to suggest and really kind of push people to limit themselves and really get serious and really honest with themselves about how much they're on their devices. And then once you get away from them, you can realize how much it was affecting the quality of your relationships and, you know, with your family and other loved ones, or even your job. And that was what I learned. My daughter was having behavioral problems in school. She was quite young, elementary school. And when I decided to delete my Facebook, her behavior at school improved. I think it would have to say about somewhere between 70 to 80%. I used to say 110%, but I was like, I really want to try to put a number on it. That was, so maybe 80, like it just seemed, it was just like easy.
Yeah.
And
because you were more present with her at home, you think?
I think so. And my example is that the girls would wake up and I would go downstairs to make them breakfast if they wanted. And I would check my phone because I thought I was doing the right thing. That's the thing too, is sometimes we think we're doing the right thing. I would put my phone in the basket in the kitchen, never take it up into my bedroom and all those things. But I would check it in the morning to see if anyone had canceled any appointments or whatever for the day. And I would just automatically then click on Facebook. And many mornings the kids would come down and I'm still standing in the doorway of the kitchen, haven't moved. And I'm just distracted by something. And sometimes it would feel important, like maybe it was a new massage technique or something that I wanted to learn for work. But it wasn't the time to look at that. You know, I should have been making the eggs. So then the kids are like, well, where's breakfast when they come down? And I'm just still on my phone. So then it's like, oh, cold cereal today. Sorry. And get them out the door. And I think what, you know, most kids, they like to feel secure and know what's going to happen for sure. Mm-hmm. So just being more present, getting them out the door. And then if you have a child that has any, you know, special needs or any sensitivities, it's even that much more important that they get, you know, the attention and just feeling that security, you know, in the mornings and then sending them off in their day.
Definitely. Yeah. So then once this idea came to you to have these classes, it seemed to me at the time we were teaching together and you were kind of like, I had this idea and I'm going to do it. It seemed like it was just like all in one. Did it feel like that in real life or is that just how it seemed to me?
It did. I think maybe I naturally work through things just almost subconsciously all day long, yeah. Especially as a massage therapist. You probably find this too, absolutely. Where you're working and there's just like this meditation process that goes along with it while you're working. So I do think I felt called to figure out how to get other people to change the way that they're using technology. And just knowing, you know, our young people are just so severely, you know, depressed. Their suicide rates in young girls are going up and suicide attempts are going up. And just all of the stats that we understand are happening. So it just really started to feel very, very important. I think it just was weighing on me. So maybe there was some planning, but I actually woke up in the middle of the night and was like, that's it. And it had the layout and everything. And I jotted down just a few notes. And then felt like it all came together.
And, fairly quickly. You know, just,
yeah, very quickly. And I was going to wait to do it, but I have a friend who said, no, don't wait, cause you'll never do it. And she's right. So I just did it right away that month. And then I just promised to do it again. And that time is coming up in April already. So
amazing. So what's the structure of this class? What does it, I guess, kind of take us through? How many sessions you do and like, how do you introduce it? Cause like you were saying, we all know that it can be kind of a touchy subject because we don't even realize how much we're on our phones, right? Mm-hmm. How much we're checking things. And yeah, I have to do this for work and I have to check and make sure nobody canceled, or I have to check and make this email to make sure everything's good. So how did you structure everything?
Yeah, we have 4 meetings in the month. So we did it one day a week for 2 hours in the evening. And the first week, we really just did data collection. Like some people didn't know you could even set it up so your phone tracked what you were doing, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and that's the thing. There was a, like the age difference and the technology use, you know, spectrum of the people that were there. It was quite vast, but everyone really enjoyed themselves, I think. And everybody seemed to benefit from that workshop. But yeah, so there's just the, one of the women, they didn't even have use their cell phone, but they used a tablet. So she brought her tablet in, you know, because there's just things that you don't, you know. And she was one of the, she was the oldest one of the group. And then, so she was, I'm not sure, maybe late 60s, and almost 70. And then the youngest one was 19 that took the class. Wow. So that was kind of fun. It was a variety of ages. But yes, back to the structure. I called it data collection. Like, let's just see what is our use. And then, also I give a little self-assessment, you know, like how often are you using it too? Just a piece of paper, you know, you just fill out your, how many times you're on your phone, or basically, are you on the phone when you're eating? Are you looking at your phone when you're in a restaurant with friends? Are you, you know, when you have a break, do you go to your phone? All those questions. And then also, like, what do you wish you had more time for? And what do you think, you know, is most important to you, and things like that. And just to try to get serious about your values and how you're living your life compared to what, how you want to be living your life. And yes, if you don't look at it, you know, easily just get distracted and wake up months later, still on your phone.
Exactly. Yeah. But,
and then so that was the first week. And then we also get into our body, meaning that we did some like breathing techniques and just yoga type moves then, which were different from what I would do now, because I actually wasn't a yoga instructor at the time, but it was just something, some more natural movements. And because a big part of being on your phone is you are not paying attention to your body. You are looking at the screen. There's a thing called email apnea. Yeah. So where you're holding your breath when you go to open an email. And this happens many times a day to many people, most people. When they get on a screen, their breath actually slows to like this short, it's a slow breath, but it's like short and just really often disjointed almost. So yeah, there's ways to just really train yourself into breathing more effectively just by using yoga, of course, or meditation. But just to become aware of that, you know, so that's what we do in the first week. And then in the second week, it was, you know, kind of analyze, what did you learn about your use, you know, and to set up some boundaries, like, can you cut that time in half? And we also have journals, and it's not mandatory, wasn't mandatory to journal by any means, but that was helpful for people who like to write, to really, you know, gather data, you know, do this data collection and really get honest about your use. And we had this little card of bingo where you would like note all the people around you, you know, a table of kids that are all on their phones, and you would note that down, or somebody, you know, on their phone while their toddler's pulling on their leg, and note that down, but also note when it was you, you know, be aware, like, I was the one on my phone when my kid was trying to get my attention, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you set up those boundaries that second week. And we also did get into the creativity part of your, you know, so we did little very basic like crafts and stuff just to re-energize that part of us, I guess, you know, remember that we like to be creative. It's so important for us to let our brains just run.
Right. That's kind of what we're made to do, is be creative. Right. And then I think I've talked about this with somebody recently too, but I'm like, why do we decide after we go through school, I don't know when this happens, that we can't be bad at some things anymore, right? Like, being bad at something is bad. We want to be the ones that are adults and not bad at things, and we know what's happening, and we want to have all this seriousness in our lives. And I'm like, where did that come from? Like, I've tried to be more curious in my life lately, and like learning piano, and like, I'm terrible at it, but it's so fun.
I tried that once when I was like 30, it didn't work out well for me either, but maybe you'll have better luck.
Well, and it's like fun to plunk. And I've been doing it for a couple of years on and off, but like, the more I come back to it, the more I can like feel my brain trying to work and make those connections. And it's so satisfying then when like something hits. But like, why aren't we trying these things? And it's because I think we get wrapped up in these screens and dulled down, and we get so much fear around trying new things, you know? So
yeah, it's interesting. That's a very good point. Yeah. And so often we just need practice at things, like, and not practice in the way of like practicing piano, sure, but just practicing trying new things and practicing just being bad at things. I like that phrase, actually, you know, just that.
Well, and you, we get to demonstrate that to our kids then too, right? Like, I'm not good at everything, so why should you be good at everything? Or there's absolutely things that I fail at and that I'm terrible at, and then I try again, or I'm like, okay, maybe that wasn't for me, or we're human. Sure. Have you heard that quote ever that says, try one thing that scares you every day?
Oh yes. I forgot about that. That's a good one.
I feel like that kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I don't think that would be me, but I could. Now when I think about it, but it's something maybe I could strive for. But although to be honest, like putting on these workshops has really freaked me out quite a bit. I've gotten in my own way a lot. And I've even thought I was going to stop doing it just because, well, to be honest, it's hard to get people to change when they don't want to. They want results, but they don't want to do the work. I mean, it's very similar, I've noticed, to any other like addiction, or I hate to say addiction, I should just say dependency, or just like, you know, people want to lose weight and then they're like, well, basically you just have to move more and eat less. And they're like, I wanted the easy route, you know, and I'm saying these things because that's what my brain says, not because I'm not pointing at anybody but myself. So it's a little bit of that, like you're kind of talking to people and everyone can agree, but then what? We all agree we know we need to change. And actually at this point when the Surgeon General already says that it's not safe for children 9 to 19 to have social media, like we know for a fact that the data's in. So now it's a responsibility, to change. And as parents, as adults, you know, we didn't really know when they first came out. They only came out like iPhones in what, 07? It hasn't been that long. So we didn't know, but now we know. So now we can do something about it. Like we don't have to feel bad about it. And you know, because sometimes we feel bad and we're like, well, we already screwed up. It's hopeless. It's like, no, we can change our mind. We can do better. And it's a responsibility to do that now. And so I try to stop talking about it, but it just keeps coming back. Like I just have to, because it feels so important. And even if I make a fool of myself and I, you know, say things or stutter or whatever, or just if I'm unclear, I'm like, I keep coming back to it. Like if one more person can make a change and that their mental health can improve, or their child's mental health can improve, or, you know, they've stayed safe, whatever way, you know.
So definitely.
I do want to get back.
We went on a tangent.
We did. Oh, this is perfect. But the third week is a little bit more just focused on self-compassion and what that feels like. We'll do some more meditation and yoga that week, and get serious about maybe defining feelings and stuff, which can sound scary, but it's not. And it just gives you a vocabulary so that you become more aware. And this is what, like, the workshop already has evolved a little bit from even this first year, just 1 year ago till now, where it's more of like, this is a take action workshop. It's actually, that's on the top of the little flyer. You know, you're going to really reclaim what is important to you, and you're going to do the work. And that's just setting up boundaries, but you're going to do it together in a community, which is really fun. And then that will bring us to the fourth week, which we enjoy a mindful meal, and it's catered by a local upcoming business, and it's delicious and lovely. And we had such a great time. And by then you feel really connected to you know, the group of people that are together. And even like I mentioned, the age range, and it's so exciting to see that. And also just a reminder that we need to be connected. We have to see people face to face. We have to get into this community with people that we don't know, or we know only as acquaintances, because these are the people that we build our towns with, and our, you know, our businesses, and our kids go to school together. And we need to remember that they're just other humans, and we might be different, and we don't see eye to eye, or we might have a huge age gap, or we might have a, you know, some sort of different, whatever, religion, politics, but we still are a community, and we all agree that that gets lost when we're online and not seeing the people and really trying to impress you know, what, 7 million strangers out in the world instead of trying to, you know, impress the 7 neighbors you have on your street that are actually the ones who are important to you, you
know? And that we never ever see.
Right. Very good point.
I've been thinking about community and neighborhoods a lot lately. It seems like the more I get into my career and like coming back home to work in Calumet and where I graduated from and like seeing this town take off, and now I'm on this board in Calumet, which is super fun, but and super fulfilling for me. The more I think about like that piece of community and like neighbors, and why don't we just like have like streets full of people hanging out outside anymore? And why aren't we connected to our neighbors? And if we were connected to each other, would crime go down? Not that we have a ton of crime up here, but like, I like all of these things are kind of like swirling in my head. So you're talking about this and I'm like, yes.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. And that's what happens too, is it has to start with you, right? It starts with that one person. And that's my hope, is to just model the behavior, because that's all I can do. I get overwhelmed when I think of like big global pictures, because it seems like I can't do anything. You know, we all know the news, we hear it, and but I can make a difference just in my own home, you know, and then that, you know, and with my own children or whatever. And then that can, you know, ripple effect out from there. And I was invited by the high school principal to go in and talk to parents about mindfulness with technology. Yeah. So that was fun. And that was my goal, was like, if I could just get one person again, you know, and that was one of those times where I felt afterwards like, oh, what did I do? You know, because you put yourself out there. But then what was it the next day I talked to you and you're like, will you do a podcast? I'm like, yep, sure. I'm back in.
Here we are.
I can't stop talking about it, you know, and it does take work. That's the biggest thing. You have to make some lifestyle changes, but it's worth it. It's designed to keep you there. The technology is.
Yeah.
But if you break the dependency or the habit or whatever you want to call it, you'll be so much better for it.
Yeah. Have your attendance of either the high school one or your one about a year ago almost now, what have they said about it?
Mostly it was, they felt good that they weren't alone.
Yes.
And they had this support that, oh, other people do the same things that I do. They also feel bad about it. See, that's the part that I'm like, I don't, you know, if we don't have to go around feeling so bad and then we kind of hide it or deny it, I'm not on there that much, or I'm only on that, you know, and it's a weird shame thing. And it reminds me very much, and probably because it's like an addiction, you know, you hide how much you eat, or you hide how much you drink, or you, you know, don't smoke around these people, but you smoke, you know, it's just, and it's, yeah. So they like to not be alone and just to feel supported. And I had heard, you know, over this year, like some of the people I bump into in town, they'll say, oh, I just saw so-and-so at a basketball game and we chatted and it was so fun. And they didn't know each other before. And I thought, well, that's a little bit of a connection. So that's really fun to think that, you know, they're still acquainted after this time. They probably don't see each other much at all, and not on purpose necessarily, but that's the point, is that they remember that they had that common goal of to live a more fulfilled life, really, is what I think it is.
Right. So the shame, it comes up so strongly for all of us, right? Every single one of these podcasts that I've talked about, where do we see the shame pop up? Because shame is such a deep, icky feeling that none of us really want to face, but really that's the only way that we get through our emotions or release emotions, right? Is just acknowledging them and like sitting with it and then being like, okay, like I can release you. And having that feeling of not so being so alone, or knowing you're not the only one doing it. Because like you said earlier, we know the data now, and now we're just judging ourselves for doing it, even though, cause we know the data.
Right.
Like, let's not judge ourselves. Let's just be aware of like maybe what it is that we're doing, and lovingly guide ourselves to where we want to be.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And that's what I hope to achieve with these meetings with people, whether it's, you know, a parent meeting or, you know, an actual workshop where we're really doing some deep work, intentional work, is just that, you know, like just to hold space, I guess, so that people feel like there is a way out of how you're living. And even if you've made decisions, you know, for every day for years, you can change your mind. I think people forget that too, is you can change your mind, whether it's, you know, how you, you know, run your household, or if you, my example for, I gave my child Snapchat when she was 12 or 13. I didn't know. And then when her phone broke shortly after, luckily, I had realized like this is probably not a good idea. So I told her she couldn't have it then until she was 15, I think, or, and I should have made it even older. But so she spent a few years being like, and very excited to tell people, because I said, I made a mistake. And that's why you can't have it now. I gave it to you too early. And she loved to tell everybody, you made a mistake. My mom made a mistake. She gave me Snapchat. No, I can't have it till I was 15. And I think it's dumb. But, you know, so happy to tell everybody that I screwed up. But I did, you know, and because I didn't know better. But then once you know better, right, then you know, need to do
that's
better.
Our responsibility. Yeah. Like you said earlier.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. There was one time we were talking in one of our lengthy chats, and you had said something, and this was like in the midst of COVID or maybe right after COVID, and we were talking about COVID, and everybody had an opinion, and everybody thought their opinion was right, and we all had very strong stances, right? And I remember you just looking at me and being like, somebody told me this once and it's so true. And she's like, what if everything you think is wrong? And I was just like, dang.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. And it's so helpful, I think.
It's because so humbling.
We get so certain about things. You know, that's how we live our life. It makes us feel safe to be certain. And just entertain that idea for a short time. Like, what if everything that you know is wrong? What if you're wrong? What if you're wrong?
Right. And so now I get to play with that sometimes if I'm getting like worked up about something. And it's like, but what if I'm wrong? Who cares?
Right. And it does take the edge off of some of those strong emotions too sometimes, because a similar saying is the opposite of what you know to be true is also true.
Yeah.
That's another, you know, because it is like, if, especially if you're in an argument, the other person obviously feels just as strongly that they're correct, you know? So, it just eases some of that, you know, suffering, I guess, if you can get it in that headspace, which kind of reminds me about yoga, because that's a big part of yoga is to just really, it's meditation. It's putting your body through postures to get to that place of meditation. It's breathing to access the nervous system, to reprogram some old patterning. But it's also just learning to kind of not be so attached to an outcome, you know, to just be more open to allowing things to unfold as they are with, you know, no judgment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just it's a really much more peaceful way to live, you know?
Yes. And we're not so attached to anything, and this living, all of it is about living in this present moment. And instead of worrying about the future or ruminating on the past, how can we be in this present moment and then just hold it with open hands?
Right. Oh, I like that. Yeah, for sure. To really be, and that's what it does. It brings you to that moment and you right now. And when you practice on the mat, what I found was so amazing was that it translated everyday life. So meaning that just over time, you know, if you're holding a posture you really don't like and you're breathing through it, well, you eventually move on from that. And you learn just subconsciously that everything that's tough just passes. And so you learn to breathe instead of becoming reactive. And quite literally, the oxygen you're breathing in to your brain is actually literally fueling your frontal cortex. So you are getting more oxygen. Science has proven that it through meditation and yoga, it grows that frontal cortex. So then you actually become more responsive as opposed to reactive. So there's an actual science base to it, but I didn't realize how much I would notice in my life it without trying, just doing the yoga, I just wasn't as reactive. You know, when my mm-hmm. teen is yelling at me and throwing tantrums, and sometimes, you know, I'm super mature just like her, so I'll be throwing a tantrum right back at her. So, but I was surprised to learn that how easily, it didn't feel like I was making an effort in my everyday life. It was just a natural response, like, oh, she's having a hard time. And so I just didn't have to be responsible for that hard time. I just allowed her to be upset and would even say, you're really upset right now, but not take it so personally and lashing out and reacting. So
that was a big piece I had to learn too in my relationship with Matt, my husband, is like allowing him to have his reactions too. And I was always such a people pleaser, probably just through growing up and wanting to help my mom, being the oldest of a big family and wanting to make her life easier. And she didn't put that on me. It was just more of like something I probably took on just seeing how busy she was. But then in my marriage, I was like, oh my gosh, like my coach was telling me, you need to let him have his reaction and you do not have to be responsible for that reaction. And he is allowed to feel whatever he wants to feel. And it took a lot of work for me to like say my truth, knowing there was probably a reaction coming or saying something that was so true and vulnerable for me, knowing he was going to have some type of reaction. But now I can do it and like completely detach from his emotion, which is so great. And not in like a apathetic way. Like, of course I still care about his feelings and all of the things, but so much healing is done when we can be so vulnerable and share what we need to share without being fearful of a reaction. Right.
Right. Oh, that's so good. And if you are being vulnerable with the right people, you also know the reaction isn't like an attack on you or whatever. It's a process that they're going through, which we learn eventually with our spouses, usually.
usually,
you know, there's a learning curve there, but where you become vulnerable and to just let it be, like, mm-hmm. without trying to fix it or change it, and let them have their reaction. And that's what I found again through yoga. I couldn't believe how easy that stuff came to me, but naturally.
Wow.
Like, I had an experience actually today in a meeting. We were together as a couple, and I was watching, you know, Jeff have his conversation and his opinion, and realizing like, oh, I don't think we're on the same page as this, but having to just sit there, it was a really interesting thing where before I would be jumping in and trying to, you know, comment and maybe try to skew or change or something and what he's saying or whatever. And I just let it go. And it was a strange thing. It wasn't as easy as some other things have come to me, but I couldn't believe I was even letting it happen, because that was new for me. Because my nervous system is on firing, and you know, because I'm a people pleaser too, so I wanted everybody in the room to feel really good instead of just hearing what he had to say, you know, all those things. And so it's just interesting, you know, to find myself being like, wow, I let that, I attribute that to yoga, that I've become unattached, which that doesn't mean, of course, in unattached as far as like yoga teachings in the West, you know, being attached to someone is a really good thing. It's just being attached to outcome as far as like an expectation or a demand on something.
Right.
I mean, when I say like, I'm not attached to that, you know.
You don't have to be in control of the outcome.
Right. Or try to, really try to manipulate it or try to, you know, change things. And
I think we get attached to outcomes or try to control that outcome unconsciously. And then us people pleasers do it with the best of intention, but sometimes it doesn't come across that way.
Oh, right. Exactly. Yeah. Especially because, of course, coming back to, we obviously think we're right and we know what's the best outcome. So we have to remember that part too. Like, do it this way.
Another thing this reminded me of, which is really kind of what it is surrendering too, which I found in my yoga practice, is like when I surrender into a hold or into a position, then when I stop fighting it, then I can like sink so much deeper and my body's like, versus like fight, 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 you know, like And so like breaking that surrender piece in my brain has been really helpful for me in yoga.
Oh, that's so great to hear, because that is a big barrier for most of us, is not the body, it's the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're sitting quiet in Shavasana, so you're lying down like corpse pose, as they call it, at the end of a practice, and you're just lying there on your back, eyes closed, still. Many people find that the hardest posture, because their mind is going, and they don't want to stay there. And you'll see that some people peeking, you know, through one eye, looking like time off, you know, as an instructor, because you're there maybe 5 minutes, not super long, but that can feel really long,
mm-hmm.
just lying there, you know, especially for type A personalities, where they got places to go and things to do, or really busy minds, you know.
I remember one time, this reminds me of, when I was first married, so probably like 10 years ago, I was like, I'm going to take a bath, you know, and I got out of my bath and I was sitting in there, and I was, all of a sudden I start tapping my fingers, twiddling my thumbs. And I'm like, it must've been at least an hour by now. And I look at my phone, it was like maybe 5 minutes. I'm like, I was like that total type A, let's get it done. Check, 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 you know, and I've tried to like bring myself back from that a lot, especially in the last year or so, but it's just so funny to think back to that. That like totally reminded me of that.
Like, yeah, for sure. And the people who need those types of, you know, practices are often the people that have struggled with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the opposite is true. There's people that just love yin yoga, which is you get put into a propped position and you stay. And it's much more effective than you would ever think. And you stay there for a long period of time, but yeah, you're just resting there, restoring, and it's really wonderful and meditative. But there's people that just want to do that, and there's that part of you that thinks you need to have more work, you need to like do more postures and move more, and you know, get your energy flowing, and you know, mm-hmm. build up some, you know, heat and all those things, you know. But we, you know, often are attracted to the thing that keeps us most comfortable.
Yes. Yeah. All of this goes back to breaking up with it, or getting uncomfortable and choosing things that are hard for us as humans.
Oh, for sure. You can't grow otherwise, right?
Right. I kind of want to switch this up a little bit and go into massage therapy a little bit, but I think like the school conversation will lead to this. What was your first thought when I asked you to teach for Encompass Academy? As a massage therapy teacher.
Oh, you know, to be honest, because I agreed to do it. Well, let's be fair. I said, well, I'm not saying no, is how I answered.
We can probably tell the story. Hey,
have to tell the story. I had taken your trigger point training,
mm-hmm.
and I was down getting a treatment on the table at the very end of a wonderful full weekend seminar of just massaging and learning new techniques. And you said that you didn't have interest in teaching the fundamentals, I think you said. I don't know. I was on the table, so I'm not clear exactly how it went. But so you said, unless you want to do it. And I was like, immediately I sparked a feeling of like, oh, that would be so cool. And so that's when I'm like, well, I knew I couldn't just say yes, because I wanted to take it so seriously that I didn't want to just, you know, I wanted to make sure it was something that I could actually fit into my life. And so I did say, well, I'm not saying no. And we kind of laughed about it. But I thought immediately, I think my response was, and this is how I feel about trying to get people to be more mindful with their technology, is, oh, I could teach people what I've learned, and then they can like help themselves and other people. It's just, it's a service. It's a service that brings me so much joy, because I can see it's really making a difference in people's lives.
Yes.
And so I thought, I probably won't be able to massage for the rest of my life, maybe, but not at the level that I'm doing now. And I just thought, well, that's perfect. You just train more people, you know, mm-hmm. to do it. And it felt really important at the time. Well, basically, I really wanted the students to know how important it is to treat people with respect, like all people, all sizes, shapes, you know, races, yes. You know, whatever they come to you as, they are a human, yeah. You know, and this, and it felt so important because I think, well, we're humans, right? We need to treat each other well. And this again comes back to how we treat people online is so different than in person. So it just was like a natural way of wanting people to understand, you know, because I don't often get these kind of comments, but sometimes someone will be like, well, what do you do? Like, have you ever had to, you know, work on a really gross person or something? And I'm just instantly just turned off by that question, you know, and I haven't had that question before because it's like, I just haven't encountered a gross person because people coming to me asking for help, how could I not,
right,
you know, feel like compassion and, you know, just almost love, honestly, for them. I know that may sound foo-foo, but it's just, that's just what, if you see another human, you know what it is you feel love for their humanity, is what that is. Of course, not them as a person, but if they're coming to me, they are really coming to me. They're vulnerable. They mm-hmm. are being very vulnerable and they're trusting me. And so that's true for any person who comes to a massage therapist or even a yoga instructor or a teacher of anything, you know, they're really mm-hmm. coming to you and trusting you. And so how you treat that person is that it's a really big responsibility. And I don't know. I've always been taught that, like through like my massage school was wonderful. And, you know, in my yoga instruction, but I'm not real familiar with other, you know, schooling. I know you went in Minneapolis. So I'm sure you've learned that there too, mm-hmm. but it's just, I guess I had a fear that we were losing some of that. And maybe that's just the,
That's why you're perfect for this position, because you really take them in and you show them the foundation, and that's your energy too, is just love other people. Like you said, it doesn't matter religion or color, or we just get to love them. And that, like you said, it might sound a little funky and like deep, but it's true. Just they're showing up vulnerable with whatever shames they're coming with. And it's not our job to judge them. It's just our job to hold space for them and help them feel a little bit better with the hour and a half that we have. In whatever way that looks for them. So oftentimes now when clients come into my room, I'll just be like, how can I serve you today? And that might look like a whole bunch of different things. Like it might just be like, I just need an hour to be quiet and lay down and have somebody work on me. It might be the deep tissue. If they need more range of motion in their life, it might be, you know, it could be so many different things, mental, emotional, physical, spiritual. It's so important to just allow people to come as they are.
That's a great way to put it.
And that brought up so many questions, I think, for our students too, because some of them, I mean, we live in a community that's not super diverse, right? And so some of them have never been around, even just a female working on a male was a little difficult for them at first, or different things. But I think really encouraging them to just like, hey, they are human just like you. Most people do not have negative intentions, and we just get to hold that space. And ultimately we're in the power position. And so if we feel not safe, we can leave the massage at any time, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely. For sure. And yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of diversity here. And so I think it's also important that we educate ourselves then, right? Mm-hmm. We learn more, which that actually might be a benefit to the internet, social media, all those things, because you can see people that look different than you. You can hear about lifestyles that are different than your lifestyle and understand that they exist. And that doesn't mean you have to think anything about them, judgment whatsoever, good, bad, or otherwise. That's not it. But just to understand that there are so many types of people that live in the world, and that most of us just see one kind of cookie cutter type of world and type of person. And that's okay. You know, mm-hmm. of course, you know, we love most of those people are people we love, right?
Right.
You know, in a small little community, but But yeah, so that is one benefit of, you know, seeing the world through a computer, because maybe a lot of us wouldn't get that chance otherwise to travel or meet new people or whatever. But yeah, it's just important to see the human in every person, you know, is the short of it.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Why for you, why is touch so important, or what have you seen through your practice that receiving touch in this way is so important for us as humans?
Well, we know that we are social beings and touch is part of our survival. We need touch to survive. We have to have other humans, or I guess pets too, but other humans to, mm-hmm. you know, to reciprocate that touch. I think now more than ever, I mean, touch in general, of course, is necessary for life. We know babies need to be touched to thrive. We know this. So we understand the fundamental need of human touch. But now we are seeing how we're getting farther and farther away from touch because we're not spending time with each other. But even when we are spending time with each other, we are communicating through technology often. Mm-hmm. And so much of what we learn about a person and at a deeper level comes from making eye contact and maybe even a touch on the arm. Or there's so many cues that we get socially when we are together that you don't get when you're online. And even, you know, even in this conversation with us, like I can see you because we're on Zoom, but like mm-hmm. we're actually not really making eye contact because I'm looking at your face, but you're looking at my face and that's not where the camera is.
Right. You know?
So like even that kind of takes away from some of that experience of humanity again and what it means mm-hmm. to make connections and how it is to interact with another human. So I kind of got sidetracked with the
that's all right.
you know, the actual eye contact and all those things, but there's just so much to be so there's just a lot of value in human touch.
Yeah.
You know, just and of course it's a safe touch when you're in a massage room because it's a professional setting. And it also, I mean, as from a therapeutic point of view, aside from the physical benefits, of we've learned now that there's a lot of, you know, emotional, energetic connections with the physical tissues that can be released. You know, if people are harboring stress, anxiety in their tissues, that actual anxiety can be released, you know, during mm-hmm. a massage session.
Yeah, but you might not even realize that you're harboring either. In one of our classes that I taught, I talked about, like I showed a study that people who don't have a partner end up dying earlier on average, I think because you don't have that connection and that touch all day, you know, like to come home to have a confidant at home. And I just thought that was interesting. And there's also been studies done on orphanages, I think back in the day when like there's a line of babies and the last ones in the line because they got touched less often were a lot weaker or even passed away because they weren't getting cared for as much, which is obviously terrible. But these things show us like how important it is for us to be nurtured through safe and loving touch, right?
Oh, absolutely.
A couple more questions and we'll wrap up. But what was your favorite part of being at the Academy? I'm going to pause real quick and just say one of the students' favorite parts of you teaching was your soapbox moments, because you would just hop up on that soapbox and go off for a while. Just brought so much like fun energy to the space and just excitement
I do get passionate about things. Yes. And when I find an opportunity, you know, I say this in jest, enlighten people. No, but it's nice to actually like, yeah, talk to people that haven't, you know, to offer ideas that people haven't thought of before. Or again, if you're coming from a place of, you know, a lot of people are all the same and you all think the same and you're kind of living in an echo chamber, it's kind of fun to shake things up sometime and be like, well, have you ever thought of this? And I think one of the things that the students laughed about the most was because I went off about pockets and how women's jeans didn't have pockets until the 70s. And that even now they're so small, and it's probably because we make that much less money. So they just figure that we only need our pockets to be 2/3 the size of a man's pocket. Can't fit your cell phone in your pocket.
Oh, anyhow, geez. Yes, back to the pageant.
Leave it at home. Yeah. But oh my goodness, the thing that I liked about teaching at the massage school, I think it was just the growth in all of us. Mm-hmm. Like I think that the students taught me way more than I taught them. And just to see, you know, there was such excitement and passion around body work and learning and just obvious, just innate talent and in the room, you know, it seems like crazy to think that we'd have another class that's going to be just the same. And it does, it happens over and over again, because the same kind of people are called to the work.
Right.
And then to see they go from being like a little bit insecure to just taking charge, because it makes sense and they understand the work and they know the importance of the work, and they're coming at it with an open heart. And I think that would be it. Just the growth of the entire community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Do you have anything else that you want to share with us today before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think just, maybe I will. Maybe I'll do a little plug here now that I have the opportunity.
Yes.
If you are finding yourself in a place where you just know something has to change, just try this. Even if technology isn't your problem, make sure that all of your notifications are off, so none of the red dots are showing up with the numbers, the red notifications, because red buttons are meant to be pushed. So every time you pick up your phone, you'll want to push the notification, because you will definitely check your email, your text, your Snap. You'll check it anyway, even if there's not a notification. So take those off. When you're watching something and they suggest another video for you, don't click on it. Always choose your own video, because it's an algorithm. And the algorithm will tell you, you know, what to do next, because they want you to pick that thing because they know you'll stay there longer. And the longer you're there, the more they can advertise for you, because you are the product. If you're using an app that's free, that means you are the product. So they are selling you to other, you know, corporations. They're selling you to whoever wants to advertise towards you. So I think those would be the two things. And then have your phone shut down at least a half an hour. I actually do 2 hours before bed at night, have it shut down completely, except for call or text. Mm-hmm. And actually have it so that it turns gray and that you don't just click the override button. Try it. So those things, shut down at night, no notifications, always choose your own content and just see if you feel any better.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in those people that took the workshop, you know, one was painting again. She was an artist who hadn't painted in a long time. She started painting again. Another one wanted, it would set her alarm to walk every morning, and then she would look at her phone to shut the alarm off and then go on Facebook and then run out of time to go for a walk. So she started walking again. So just little, you know, it might not be earth shattering changes, but
you know, but it is for your own life, right?
Yeah. And to really, you know, especially if you're struggling, right? Or, you know, even if you're not struggling, but if you really, you know, something has to change, just start there.
So. Yeah. When did you said your next class is in April?
Yeah, in April. It'll be Wednesdays at the Leo's Building in April.
Leo's Building in Loriam.
Yeah. And I have registration. It's just call or text my phone. It's 906-337-2962.
And just call or text to let you know that you're in for the class.
Yep. And then I can get more information out to you. And it caps at, I think, 9 people, because it's a meal and everything. So 9 people. And registration will close on March 31st, with actually might be like Easter or something. Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah. So the first class would start that Wednesday already, April 3rd. Okay. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And then the 4 following it starts at 6 p.m. What time do you start at?
I put 6:30.
Okay.
To 8:30. I had it 6 to 8 a different time, but I think 6:30 would be maybe a better start. But we'll find out.
Yeah, for sure. That's how we learn, right? Great. That I'll put that in the show notes too, so that if anybody needs, they can contact you and reach out and come to your class. I think I need to come to your class. So I'm like looking at my calendar. You've convinced me, Gina. I'm coming.
Yeah, I would love to have you. That would be great. You could definitely add so much to the course, because that's the thing. I'm not telling people anything they don't already know. It's just we often have to hear it a lot of times, many, many times over and over. And I need to work on some stuff too. Like when I did it in May, I was like, oh, I had more things I needed to do. And I learned so much. So I'm hoping that I can get 9 more teachers to come and teach me more things? Stuff. Yeah.
And having absolutely. The accountability, it makes it like for me too, like makes everything a little more real. And I want to show up and I want to be a good student and I want to do my things and do my homework, you know? So then when you know, you have to come back next week and the following week, then you get this, you know, share your outcomes. Right. It makes it a lot more real for people.
Sure. Yeah. And it makes you, live more intentionally and, mindfully, right? You're just aware. You know, even just when I was talking about it, my husband back a year ago, he was like, oh, I went to the orthodontist and I just kind of looked around and every single person had a phone in the waiting room and nobody looked up when I walked in. And it was because I told him that was the kind of stuff we were doing for observation data collection week, you know. I was like, oh, it's just kind of, you know, spilling out into what he's thinking of too.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Just noticing.
Yeah, exactly. That's huge.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, and thank you so much for hopping on and having this conversation with me today. I think it can change a lot of people's, even just like you said, just that curiosity and change people's outlook on their technology for sure. So I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks so much, Nikki.
And that, my friends, is a wrap on this episode of the Journey to Wellness podcast. I would love it if you could take the time to head over and give us a review on what you thought of this podcast. And if you have any questions or need to find anything, you can check out the show notes or you can send us a DM as well. We are so thankful you're here and we look forward to seeing you next time.